poorer people, people of color. So it's definitely a big issue, and it's not just a political one, right? It's going to have a giant effect on people's lives.
And finally, Andrew, let's end where we began, which was with the elections in Ohio, but with J.D. Vance, the best-selling author of Hillbilly Elegy, the Trump-supported Republican senatorial candidate winning its significance.
Mm-hmm. You know, so it's definitely, you know, it's going to be perceived as a win for Trump because Donald Trump did endorse his campaign. His son had definitely done a lot of rallies with him, as did the former president. And, you know, it's both candidates were pretty conservative.
We have 10 seconds.
I guess J.D. Vance was probably seen as, you know, more anti-establishment. But, you know, it's probably not terribly different than if Josh Mandel had won.
Well, Andrew Perez, senior editor and reporter at The Lever, will link to your reports at democracynow.org. And a clarification to one of our headlines. PayPal has canceled the account and frozen the funds of the independent news outlet Consortium News, which has criticized U.S. policy on Ukraine. That does it for our show, Democracy Now!, produced with Renee Fels, Mike Burke, Messiah Rhodes, and Sheikh Maria Terracena.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 7:59 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Roland.
Slick, you investors in hate, you Saddams and you Bushes, you Bin Ladens and snakes, you billionaire bullies, you're a globalized curse. You put war on the masses and then you clean out the purse. And that's how it's done. War after war, you old feudal parasites, you just sacrifice the poor. You got the cutting-edge weapons, but your scam's still the same as it's been since the Romans. Yo, it's the Patriot game. Yo, that's the war racket. It's the war racket. It's the war racket. It's the war racket. You twisters of language. You creeps of disguise. Yeah, disinformation. It's like worms in your eyes. You privileged bankers, you gambler thieves, you profit on war, you think it's just less money in peace. So that's how it's done. Time after time, country after country, and crime after crime. You pretend it's religion, like there's no one to blame for the dead and impoverished in your little patriot game. Honey, that's the war racket. That's the war racket. That's the war racket. That's the war racket.
Indeed, that's what we'll be talking about once again today, the war racket, right here on KBOO Community Radio. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your weekly host, Paul Roland. And after a couple of announcements, we will be talking with Ray McGovern, ex-CIA officer and a longtime opponent of U.S. foreign policy in the matter of war and the military, largely. We're going to be talking about the fog of war and the battle of disinformation over Ukraine. But we'll have that up in just a few minutes. So hold on, Ray, just a second. So, yeah, you just heard at the tail end there of Democracy Now! That Consortium News' PayPal account was suspended because of their criticism of the U.S. policy on the Ukraine. On Ukraine, sorry. And, yeah, so it's a good thing we have Ray McGovern and at least a few voices keep talking about a more nuanced, a broader view, a more historical view, perhaps. And we here on KBOO take this truth-seeking very seriously. And this is a time to remind you of why we exist here on KBOO and why it's so important that you support this. It seems like just about all the radio stations on the left end of the dial are having our spring membership drives right about now, and that includes us. And that's what listener-sponsored radio means. And so we do need you to step up. We're starting out a little bit slow, I will say. You know, maybe people think we, you know, have towards the end of May for this drive, but we do need people to step up. We've got a goal of, I'll look it up. But anyway, that's not important. I think it's about $50,000. Your contribution right now will be matched dollar for dollar up to $12,000 at the beginning of this drive, thanks to the generous support of a group of anonymous donors. So this is your opportunity to double your money. So please go to kboo.fm as soon as you're able to and click on donate. Or you can text 54321. No, text KBOO to 54321. I always get those mixed up. Or you can do it the old-fashioned way and mail us your check to KBOO 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Please don't delay. Please do it today. We do need your support to keep on going in these tough times. And, of course, everybody's thinking about the news most recently. We pretty much knew the Supreme Court was leaning in that direction, but now they've tipped their hand, and we have yet another massive front opened up to struggle upon. And you can count on KBOO to bring you the up-to-date news and information that you need, including what you just heard, Democracy Now!, which we air twice daily at 7 a.m. and at 4 p.m. And of course, we have this morning talk show strip, which is a vital place where you have a chance to hear guests like Ray McGovern coming up in a bit and have a chance to share your views on the air. Okay, one quick thing that I really need to let you know about. The totem pole journey is on the road once again. This is, if you haven't had a chance to check out Jewel James of the Lummi Nation and his House of Tears Carvers, you really should treat yourself to this opportunity if you're in Portland or in Eugene or nearby. So the Totem Pole Journey is led by members of Lummi Nation and the House of Tears Carvers. The 2022 Totem Pole Journey is the latest in a dozen journeys conducted over the past 20 years. The 2022 journey builds upon, strengthens, and reaffirms the growing indigenous-led environmental movement across the Pacific Northwest that began with a successful campaign to oppose proposed fossil fuels projects in the region, including a successful Lummi-led effort up along the Salish Sea. So they are going to be in Eugene from May 5th to May 8th. Three different events: Science and Ceremony Symposium, Art Activism and Ceremony, and Whale People and Totem Pole Exhibit, and IMAX-style film screenings. That's from Thursday, May 5th to Saturday, May 7th in Eugene. You can just go to Totem Pole Journey 2022, Google it, and you'll come up with all this information that I did. Here in Portland, Snake River to Salish Sea, Spirit of the Waters, May 10th at EcoTrust, The Red, on Salmon Street, 831 Southeast Salmon, between Southeast 8th and 9th. There you're going to be able to see them. That's 6 p.m. on May 10th. So you can even do it after work if you work during the day. Once again, do yourself a favor and check out this wonderful. If you haven't heard Jewel James speak, that in itself is something well worth the effort of getting down there on that's, I believe, next Tuesday, May 10th at 6 p.m. at EcoTrust on Southeast Salmon and 8th. Okay, that's it for that. Let me just introduce our guest briefly. Today's guest, Ray McGovern, has been fighting U.S. disinformation on its foreign policy wars and military since leaving the CIA, where he worked as an analyst from 1963 to 1990. In the 1980s, he chaired the National Intelligence Estimates and prepared the president's daily brief. His post-retirement work includes commenting for Consortium News. There you go, Consortium News, just suspended from PayPal. Russia Today and Sputnik News, among other outlets, on intelligence and foreign policy issues. In 2003, he co-founded Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, or VIPS. You can read a more extensive a biography of Ray McGovern on KBOO.fm. I actually cribbed it almost entirely from Wikipedia, so you can go there as well. All that said, good morning, Ray.
Good morning.
So I heard you on alternative radio, David Barsamian show here on KBOO yesterday, and it was a really, it's, you know, there's so few voices like yours out there. It's kind of jarring. It seemed you were almost slightly apologetic that you might be offending people, not apologetic, but you were aware that, you know, unlike the, you know, your opposition to the Iraq War and the fairly large scale opposition to the Iraq War, there's really not a lot of public opposition to what's going on in Ukraine. And you know, you've got such a Saddam Hussein was a useful villain for a lot of people, certainly, but a lot of people got it that he wasn't really the real target there, or he was and he wasn't. Of course, there is a lot of geopolitical and natural resource issues. Anyway, so why don't you just sort of lay out your case? I know there's a lot of history and a lot of complicated geopolitics going on, but lay out the case that you've been making on, you know, why it's a bigger story than just a big bad Putin and Russia picking on Ukraine, which is also true.
Well, Paul, it's kind of complicated, but let me start this way. When Bill Casey was head of the CIA, I worked directly for him. He briefed the rest of the cabinet at the first cabinet meeting in the White House, and luckily a good friend of mine was there. Okay, I asked her. Her name is Barbara Honecker. I asked her to kind of write down what she heard. She was an assistant to one of the advisors there in the White House, and so she was there and she listened to Casey. The date is February 1981. And here's what she says. The meeting was in the Roosevelt Room, not far from the Cabinet Room. I was present at the meeting as assistant to the Chief Domestic Policy Advisor to the President. Casey first told Reagan that he had been astonished to discover that over 80% of the intelligence that analysts used and what the CIA produced was based on open public sources like newspapers and magazines. Casey didn't know that. He thought that if you didn't get it from some paid spy, it wasn't worth anything. Now, what he did now was to explain what his objectives were, his goal as the director of the CIA. And he replied with this quote, okay? Now, please, you might want to take this down. Quote, we'll know when our disinformation campaign, our disinformation program is complete, when everything the American public believes is false. Ooh. Now, as I say, Barbara Honegger was there. She took copious notes. Contemporaneously, she shared that with a reporter in the major media. It was published, but then, of course, completely suppressed.
I take it wasn't saying that tongue-in-cheek.
Well, you know, that's not the way it worked out, is it? The intelligence services have been able to skew what we know by very willing and cooperative mass media folks, so that 80% of what we believe the American public, for example, on Ukraine, is false. False. That's the adjective that that Bill Casey used. And of course, he was an operator. He wasn't an analyst, and so he could run things like the Iran-Contra business and other things that were totally illegal. And if he disguised it by his contacts with the media, you and I would never find out about it, Paul. Now, that was a far cry. Now, that was 1981. That was a far cry from 1947, when the CIA and other intelligence agencies were set up. And it was President Truman that said, I set them up so that there would be untreated, his word, untreated intelligence coming to me. I didn't want to put these people under the Pentagon or under the State Department. The Pentagon's always portraying Russians as 10 feet high, and the State Department's always defending its policy. I want them to report directly to me. Their careers have to do with me. I want them to tell the truth. The word he used was untreated intelligence. So that was 1947. We had come a long way by 1981. Now it's pretty much completely skewed so that we can't find out what's going on in Ukraine, for example. And this is important because Mr. Putin regards what we have been doing in Ukraine as an existential threat, you know, like a threat to the existence of Russia. Everything that high-level policymakers, like the defense secretary, have said tends to reinforce that impression. What was it that your general, Lloyd Austin, the secretary of defense, saying that our aim is to weaken Russia? We're going to weaken Russia. And of course, there's been a long campaign by folks that want tension with Russia. So my point simply is that they're really making great success, the heirs of Casey. PayPal, they're doing unconscionable things with respect to Consortium News. And I'm glad, I'm really glad that Democracy Now! Is exposing this. This is maybe impolite, Paul, but I think I need to tell you that Democracy Now! Is not immune to this kind of treatment. When I discovered, with good evidence, together with my technical colleagues, that there was zero technical hack of the DNC emails that were so prejudicial to Hillary Clinton, there was no technical hack by Russia or by anybody else. And we have, what's today? Today's what, the fifth? In 2 days, we'll have the second anniversary of the proof of that. Now, you may not know that, because the New York Times, Washington Post, mainstream media have suppressed it. What it is the testimony under oath of the head of this cyber firm, CrowdStrike, to whom FBI Director Comey deferred. And he says under oath, now get this, on the 5th of December 2017, that they really found no evidence that there was a hack of the DNC. It was not by Russia, not by anybody else, and clearly the only alternative was a copy. You copy down this information, you put it on a thumb drive, you put it in your pocket, and you carry it across the Atlantic to where WikiLeaks would get it and publish it. Now, that's key. So again, that was December 5th, 2017. Now, Adam Schiff, the head of the House Intelligence Committee, suppressed that. Now get this, I do the math. He suppressed that until May 7th, 2020. So almost 2 years ago. Then Schiff was forced to release it. But you know, if a tree falls in a forest and there's nobody around to hear it or listen, nobody knows that all this business about the Russian hack of DNC emails prejudicial to Hillary Clinton was a farce. Now, I hate to identify myself with what Trump had said, but I think your readers and your listeners may be, you know, impartial enough to say, well, even a broken clock is correct. What is it? I guess two times a day, right? So, so Trump was correct. They did everything they could.
Let me just interrupt for just a second here, and I do want to focus on what's going on in Ukraine more. But since you brought this up, and I did mention your Wikipedia page, I just want to bring up something they said about what you're talking about. I'll just read this paragraph. It says, McGovern holds a position that the theft of the DNC emails was an inside job, and you may have revised that, but let me just read the whole thing, and not the work of Russian agents, contrary to the findings published by the U.S. Intelligence Committee. In McGovern's view, the metadata of the in the files released by Guccifer 2.0 originated from a computer in the eastern United States, but was manipulated to give the appearance that the documents came from Russia. With William Binney, McGovern released a VIPS report in support of his theory, which was taken up by The Nation and other outlets and promoted by Russian state media. Many of the VIPS, that's your group of veteran intelligence professionals, however, did not sign the report. It was later revealed that the inside job theory itself originated from a disinformation campaign run by a UK-based pro-Kremlin hacker named Tim Leonard. Care to comment on all that?
Yeah, it's a bunch of lies. I'll refer back to what Bill Casey said. We'll know when our disinformation program is complete, when everything the American public believes is false. People think that if they look at Wikipedia, they're getting the truth, but they are not. Now, I just say that very early, Bill Binney, of course, about the most, he's the brightest guy that ever worked for the National Security Agency. He knows how these things work. He knows what you can see when there's a hack. And he was in possession of the charts that Ed Snowden brought out to Hong Kong way back when. Yeah. Now, what did the charts show? They showed the trace routes. They showed exactly how the NSA would find any such hack. And on the 12th of December, 2016, okay, so 1 month after the election, Bill and the rest of our VIPS, Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity colleagues, published a memorandum which explained in layman's terms why it could not have been a hack, that it was an inside job, and now that is proved by congressional testimony from the head of the cyber firm that was supposed to look into that. He couldn't lie under oath. Look it up.
So, okay.
December 5, 2017. And the rest of the story is, that's 2.5 years and he kept that under wraps. And now we have the New York Times and the major media keeping it under wraps too, for 2 days short of 2 more years. So that's a pretty good, indication of how powerful and how much success Casey had. Now, I mentioned that Amy Goodman is not immune to this kind of thing. Now, if you're going to demonize Putin and you want to jump on the bandwagon, and you have Bill Binney and me and others showing that, well, no, Trump is right on this one. They did try to prevent him from becoming president, and they did, once he was president, try to emasculate him and not let him do anything good. That all happens to be true, but that is verboten on Democracy Now. And so, whereas I used to be a guest regularly before Russiagate, I've been banned like the plague from Democracy Now, just to show you the extent that reputable media are fearful of appearing to be pro-Russia or, worse still, pro-Trump. I should probably make clear, Paul, that I think Trump was the worst president the United States ever had. But, you know, I like that broken clock. He's right about the interference. And that is really important, because when you look at most Americans, they don't know that. And the reason they don't know that is because Casey succeeded in a magnificent way. And now the New York Times is picking up on that. I'm going to write an article, because on the 7th of May, we'll have a 2-year anniversary of the New York Times, Washington Post suppression of this congressional testimony under oath.
So let me jump in again. So you will admit that it's very, very, very difficult for people, even the people with, you know, very critical people, highly intelligent people, well-informed people, to suss out this kind of stuff. Because, you know, we don't have access to, you know, assuming that the raw intelligence that it goes in to the CIA or wherever is, you know, has validity, you know, they themselves, you know, have to, you know, it takes people with a lot of experience in order to be able to evaluate that intelligence. We don't even have that. We're not, you know, there's several, many layers of filters between us and, you know, actual information about whatever decision making, you know, behind the scenes at the Kremlin or, you know, whatever it is. So I guess that's an important caveat. So,
Paul, I disagree. Okay. Now, we have a situation where Casey, when he first came in 1981, he thought it worth remarking at the first cabinet meeting that he was astonished to discover that his analysts depended for 80% of their material on open sources. He called them public sources, like newspapers and magazines.
Okay, you did say that already. That's true.
Yeah, okay. Now, what I'm trying to say here is that if you read the memo that Bill Binney and his other technical director, former from the NSA, wrote on the 12th of December 2016, we lay that out so, you know, a middle schooler can understand the technical aspects of this. What you have to contend with, Paul, is the strong aversion to saying that Trump could be right about anything, the strong aversion to appearing pro-Trump. Now, intelligence officers are not supposed to worry about that kind of thing, and that's why you have me telling the truth. What I'm saying is now the evidence is out. Now the evidence, there are three people indicted for manufacturing ties between a Russian bank and the Trump Organization, manufactured out of whole cloth with the emails, and now there will be a trial later this month of this one guy, Sussman. So it's not like I'm making this stuff up. It sounds so strange to you because, you know, it's really hard to get information when the New York Times and the Washington Post suppress it.
Okay, let's get back to the fog of war in the Ukraine. I wanted to, you know, I use that phrase, and it does come from a film, a documentary film about U.S. Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara, who you might want to talk about. But anyway, it was actually derives from the military concept of the fog of war, which refers to the difficulty of making decisions in the midst of conflict, which is a very different way what I'm using the term as. And I think has achieved some of this sense in the public mind, is that it's an intentional fogging of information, which is what we're talking about. So, you know, you've got the difficulty of making really, you know, real-time decisions on, you know, these events of vast importance, like war and the diversion of massive amounts of financial resources, state financial resources, natural resources, at a time when they desperately need to be, you know, given to fighting climate change, the huge existential threat facing all of us. And instead, it's just more fog created in terms of conflicts and all that. So the fog of war, that's the way I use it. So while we only have about a half an hour left, I did want to let people call in, which is 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. I have Ray McGovern with me, a former longtime CIA analyst and now a fierce critic of U.S. disinformation, U.S. foreign policy in matters of war and peace. So you've laid out the, you know, it's a deep history, you know, the going back to the, you know, going back to the formation of the Soviet Union to begin with, the war, you know, we don't know, most people don't know that there's actually a war carried out by the U.S. and European nations on Russia at the very beginning, which kind of skewed things. Then there's, you know, then there's World War II and the temporary alliance, you know, with the Soviet Union and the United States, and then immediately, you know, before and then after, during and after the war, the turning of all the forces of U.S. Military foreign policy, et cetera, from Nazi Germany to the Soviet Union, the long Cold War, the long propaganda battles, the war for, you know, the telling the controlling the narrative of what's really going on in terms of the aims of U.S. foreign policy, basically to, you know, protect global capitalist interests, including oil resources, et cetera. You know, the USSR had its own propaganda, internal propaganda. Anyway, so there's this deep history, and Ukraine was really a central part. It was, you know, considered to be a central part of the Soviet Union. It's you know, obviously Putin considered it incredibly strategically important. So quickly lay out, you know, why, I guess I'll just ask the question, why did Zelensky do a seemingly suicidal move and not, you know, for some people not cave in to Putin's demands? Other people would say, why not go the diplomatic route right off the bat? What's going on there?
Well, Paul, Zelensky, on the 24th of February last year, announced that he was going to take back Crimea, and that if it took military force to do that, he would go ahead and do that. So that's the 24th of February, 2021. Now, the next day, Soviet forces started moving toward the border with Ukraine. A whole bunch of them, okay? It looked really, really dangerous because there were maybe 80,000, 100,000 Soviet or Russian forces on that border. So what happened? Well, Joe Biden called up Putin, and he said, Mr. Putin, how many, you have an awful lot of forces there on the Ukraine border. How many do you have? Putin said, well, ask your advisors, because my defense minister said just this morning that there are two full armies and three enhanced airborne units. So, yeah, you're right about that, Mr. Biden. There are a whole lot of them, and we're not going to let Zelensky take back Crimea. And by the way, Mr. Biden, you have two highly sophisticated missile ships, warships, on their way through the Dardanelles to the Black Sea. We think this is a really, really bad idea. I ask you personally, turn those around. We don't need that kind of thing in this kind of milieu, okay? So what does Biden do? He turns those ships around and says, no, don't visit the Black Sea. Go see Greece. It's nicer in Greece, okay? And then he says, we need to have a summit. We need to have a summit. Now, that was in April, he said that. In June, on June 16th, there is a summit in Geneva, a person-to-person summit. Now, we don't know much about what happened there, except from the lips and the voice of Joe Biden himself. They're trying to get him on the plane to go home, right? Saying, well, come on, Joe, come on, we have to leave it. No, he says, I want to talk to the press a little bit more, and I know it's inappropriate. These are quotes, okay? I know it's inappropriate to say what I told Putin, but he's under real pressure. China is squeezing Russia. China has this long, several thousand mile border with Russia. They claim some of Russian land. They're going to be a major military as well as economic power. Putin has a lot to worry about. He's being squeezed by China. Biden's word. Now, that could not be farther from the real situation. To the degree there's a squeeze, Paul, it's a fraternal embrace. And the rest of the year, last year, since June 16th, was spent by Putin and Xi showing that they had an alliance that exceeds the normal kind of alliance and has no upper end. Now, that's the big change. That's the tectonic change in the correlation of forces in the world. It cannot be exaggerated. So what am I saying here? I'm saying that the way things worked out last year and early this, China said, we will throw our full support to you. And when Putin was in Beijing on the 4th of February, now everything I've said up to now is factual. I can prove it. This, what I'm just going to say is a kind of a speculation, okay? This is how I think the conversation went. Here's Putin. Mr. Xi, my best friend, look, the West is not taking us seriously. They're going to put missiles into Poland, Romania, maybe Ukraine. That give me 5 minutes to decide whether I destroy the world. We're going to have to go into Ukraine. Now, Xi, You mean after the Olympics, right? Now, this is really hard to swallow for my Chinese specialist friends. They all say, no, the China has a bedrock policy of non-interference in the affairs of other countries. They would never give Putin the green light to do what he did. Well, they may be right. I may be wrong. But if you look at how tightly how quickly and how tightly China supported Russia to include its aims in Europe, I suggest that the evidence is such that China said, yeah, okay, we'll give Putin a waiver on this non-interference stuff. I call it a waiver on Westphalia, and that's what he's got to do. We Chinese are enemy number one for the Americans. To the degree that the U.S. is bogged down in NATO in Europe, well, we have a little breathing space. And if push comes to shove, we'll support Putin right to the end. And what does that mean? That means on the off chance, I think this is an outside possibility, the off chance that Putin gets backed into a corner, the first thing he's going to do is not use nuclear weapons. He's going to go to his friend Xi and say, look, would you stir up a little trouble in the South China Sea, East China Sea, opposite Taiwan? I need the Americans to be fearful of a two-front war. Even the dunderheads who run the U.S. military can understand that they can't deal with a two-front war. And I think Xi will say, well, we'll give him another exception and we'll support him. Now, if my Chinese analyst friends are right, and Xi says, no, I've supported you enough, I'm not going to do any more, then we have a realistic possibility that Putin will turn to the use of small nuclear weapons, which can be delivered at 10, 15, 20 times the speed of sound. And that will be a demonstration that, look, the U.S. has to, the NATO has to back off. I don't think it's going to come to that. But what really worries me is that the White House and the young advisors that have Biden's ear don't seem to really have any idea of how dangerous the situation is right now.
So this is a lot of big picture stuff you're talking about, and people aren't, I think we resist sort of thinking about these large geopolitical questions just because they are so big and so far removed from our daily lives. We no longer have the you know, it's a different situation from the Cold War when there really was this just incredible anti-communist propaganda where people either feared that somehow, you know, Russia was actually going to invade the United States, or that, you know, there's the domino theory that one after another country would go communist and would be threatening. Most people didn't necessarily look at the whole. Some people, you know, had a real political view and actually did understand that we really were protecting, you know, capitalist, you know, access to natural resources, oil, minerals, et cetera. That was the main thing going on. But most people were at a kind of a lower level of, you know, sort of propagandized by the actual direct threat, or just this, you know, this fear that, you know, this, that somehow, you know, there is a communist threat within the United States that would take our freedoms away or whatever. That's, you know, kind of still a dominant theme of the Trumpista faction. You know, if you even on the streets here in Portland, you know, the Proud Boy versus Antifa wars, you still have these Proud Boy people saying that, you know, we're all communists and we're, you know, the communists are threatening. It's still really, really strong. But anyway.
Paul, it's really important. You know, Russian specialists, such as they are, who have been trained over the last 20 years, don't know nothing, okay? They don't realize that the Soviet Union fell apart. They don't realize that Russia isn't communist anymore. No, China is communist. What is a special brand of communist? And they are inward looking. They are not threatening anyone except those that they think will infringe upon their own sovereignty. So we have people like, what's her name? Fiona Hill, who actually had an influential position for the last 20 years in CIA and then at the National Security Council, saying that she's sure that Putin wants to kick the United States out of Europe, and as she put it delicately, and not let the door hit in the rear, not let the door hit the U.S. in the rear end on the way out. Now, people are still exposed to that. It's a real, real tragedy, but they don't know which end is up. They don't know that the U.S. and NATO have posed an existential threat to Putin. Now, let me, people, oh, McGovern, what do you mean? Well, this is what I mean. There are missile sites built already in Romania, almost completed in Poland, and the danger, of course, that they were intended to be put in Ukraine itself. What about these missile sites? Well, U.S., the administration, they're ABM missile sites. They're anti-ballistic missile sites. Anti-ballistic missile sites to whom? Iran, yeah, that's it. Iran might attack, you know, but Iran's not going to attack. Iran doesn't have any ballistic missiles or nuclear warheads. Give me a break. It can't be against Iran. We know who it's against because the diameter, the installation itself for these, quote, ABM missiles can accommodate what Putin calls Tomahawk missiles. Tomahawk missiles. They're very deadly cruise missiles. And then you have hypersonic missiles that would give Putin 5 to 7 minutes to decide whether to destroy the rest of the world. Now, as I say, those sites already exist in Romania. They're almost complete in Poland. Now, what does that mean? Well, that means that if Putin is interested in protecting the territorial integrity and the very existence of Russia, well, he's gotta regard this as an existential threat. And that's exactly what he does. Now, what does that mean? That means he's got to win. That means he has no choice to lose in Ukraine. Can he win? Sorry to tell you Americans, but yes, he can win. As a matter of fact, you've been so deceived by the media, he's already winning. And I expect within the next couple of weeks that he will consolidate what he's done in South and Southeastern Ukraine to show that he has won. The objectives that he wanted. So where does that leave us? Well, that leaves us with an existential threat. What's the comparison? The comparison is not Iraq. The comparison is not Afghanistan. Those were wars of choice on part of the U.S., but there was no existential threat. And so when we lost, we went home, no problem. Now, this is different. Where's the comparison that is apt here? The Cuban Missile Crisis. Now, I was a young second lieutenant in those days. I remember it very vividly, okay? What happened was Khrushchev tried to put an existential threat in Cuba. Kennedy called him on it. Luckily, there were enough sane heads that prevailed. Kennedy gave up some missiles in Turkey that were going to be phased out anyway, and there was a peaceful resolution. Now, what's the situation now? Well, it's an existential threat, okay? Can we not understand how Putin looks at this, that he can't lose? Now, how do you explain all this weaponry going into Ukraine? Paul, I'll just give you my favorite acronym. It's the Mickey Mat, okay? It rhymes with Mickey Mouse, or sort of rhymes. Mickey Mat, it's the Military Industrial Congressional Intelligence Media Academia Think Tank Complex. Grew like Topsy after Eisenhower warned about the MIC, okay? Now, why do I say media? Because the media is the linchpin. It's controlled by the rest of the Mickey Mat. You can't get the truth from it. And without the media being completely co-opted, which is the case now, the mainstream media, you can't make this thing work. So cui bono? Who's profiting from all this? The Mickey Mat. They're making money tons over fist. The Russians are destroying the weaponry we put in Ukraine. No problem. That just means we have to create more. We have to make more money, and we'll put more in, and they'll be destroyed. You know, it's like Petraeus training the Iraqi troops to a fare-thee-well. Oh, they're great troops. And all of a sudden, ISIS scares them, and they leave all their weaponry on the field and withdraw. Now, there was a big beneficiary of that. Who was it? The Mickey Mat. They had to build more weapons, sell more weapons. So this is really, really serious.
Okay, Ray, I got to break in. We do have a caller finally, and the number again is 503-231-8187. I have Ray McGovern, who is a longtime analyst, CIA officer, and has now been active with other intelligence professionals for sanity, opposing the fog of disinformation from what he calls the Mickey Mat. So we do have Paul. If Paul has been patiently waiting all these minutes, go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Napoleon had famously said that if you want to understand the foreign policy of a country, you need to understand its geography. And I think geography is an antidote to disinformation. And when you look at a map of Ukraine, it's bordered on the west with four NATO countries, Poland, Slovakia, Hungary, and Romania. And the idea that Putin is invading Ukraine for some NATO threat that might happen, that Ukraine might become part of NATO or might have missiles. The idea that he would do this and proceed towards four NATO countries, which Biden has said they would defend every inch of, and is absurd. It's the most imbecilic military strategy I've ever heard in my life. And on top of that, now you have Finland, who's probably going to be a NATO toot sweet because they have a 700-800 mile border with Russia. I mean that just sounds imbecilic. So there's been a NATO threat, but the idea of that being a way to handle it, and in the process grinding up your military and destroying your economy. No. I mean, this guy is a nut. And Russians are nutty, and I'll give you an example of in the 1980s when we had Chernobyl, and I was in Europe at that time, and I was actually in Sweden at that time, and the world discovered Chernobyl because the alarms of the nuclear reactors went off, and they realized there was nothing wrong with the Swedish nuclear reactors. There was something else happening, and the Russians denied reality, right, for how long? I mean, that's who we're dealing with, okay? Nothing's changed. And I think the person who's really summarized this best, sadly, is Brzezinski in his book, The Grand Chessboard, on page 121. He makes a very simple statement. He says, Russia can't be in Europe without Ukraine also being in Europe, whereas Ukraine can be in Europe without Russia being in Europe. And at the end, he says that Russia's decision regarding the next phase of its history, this is when the Soviet Union fell, either to be part of Europe or to become a Eurasian outcast, neither truly of Europe nor Asia.
Okay, Paul.
Near broad conflict, and that's what he's chosen, to be a Eurasian outcast.
Okay, we're running out of time, Paul. Let's let Ray have a response. I think Paul was saying that Putin is a nut, I believe. Go ahead, Ray.
Paul, were you saying Putin was a nut?
Well, the what Russia's doing now is what Russia's always done.
Okay, go ahead, Ray.
Well, now, Paul, I'm afraid you, I'm not sure you know much about Russian history, if you say that. What Putin is facing, 5 minutes, 7 minutes to decide whether to blow up the rest of the world? I mean, put yourself in his position. I happen to think that he regards very seriously his responsibility to protect the Russian people. He can't protect them if there's a threat that they can be wiped out by these new missiles. I should say they're not ABM missiles. They would be Tomahawks. They would be hypersonic missiles, and they would fit in these same little installations in Romania and Poland.
Okay,
so,
Ray,
let me just
interrupt. You said on alternative radio yesterday that the idea that a fair number of people are putting out that, you know, it's sort of almost a domino, that the first they invade Ukraine, and then there's the possibility that Putin might invade a NATO country, and you said that's just absurd. Isn't there some absurdity to, you know, on the other foot, you know, that I'm sorry, I kind of lost my train of thought.
Yeah, no, I think what you're about to say is Putin being absurd in thinking that we good guys would ever use these missiles.
Right, exactly.
He would have on him. Well, my God, you know, look at what we've done since the Soviet Union imploded. Instead of welcoming them into a new European security arrangement, we rebuffed them. Long story short, we drove them into the hands of China. And now you have, well, they talk about a unipolar world that existed after the war and then after the implosion of the Soviet Union. We don't have a unipolar world anymore. The U.S. is not exceptional or even what's the other way. Anyhow, the U.S. is not as exceptional as it used to be. And so what we have now is a bipolar world, and I use that adjective in both senses of the term. It's crazy. We have driven Putin into Xi's arms. There's a natural affinity there. Russia has all these natural resources. Xi has a lot of technical expertise. And the new situation breaks the very white, the lily white NATO West, faces them against people of color that comprise the vast majority of people in the world.
Okay, I got to cut in again. We only have about 5 minutes left, and I got to let Paul go. Sorry, I know you wanted to respond back. But we do have one more caller. Greg, I'll give you try to make it quick and let Ray respond because we're running out of time. Go ahead, Greg.
Hey there, Ray. Happy to talk to you. Let's see. I heard your talk yesterday on Barsabian's show. It was a couple of weeks ago, and I noticed that you did not mention the naval base that's on the Crimean Peninsula, which I believe is the key to all of this. Wouldn't you agree?
Of course. It's their only ice-free, all-year-round naval base.
Absolutely, yes. I just wish you'd include that when you talk about this, because that's the thing he's actually protecting, because it has our only deterrent, those ballistic missiles that are on the nuclear subs. It appears as though Turkey's going to keep the straits open. So you notice we just sank their flagship. I think we disabled it first, but there was no mention of where the flagship was based. It's been completely verboten, and I can say these words because I'm German, Ray, from the mass media. So just wanted to make sure you agreed with that, and somehow you weren't missing that.
Yeah. Yeah, most people don't realize that we did a coup in Kiev on the 22nd of February, 2014. We wanted Ukraine to become part of NATO.
Yeah.
And that's where Putin and his advisor said, we can't possibly let our only ice-free all-year-round naval base go to NATO. I mean, if you were Putin, how would you have reacted? Most of the people in Crimea wanted to join Russia anyway. The plebiscite was held, and they were annexed.
Absolutely, yes. And he just wants a land corridor there. I hear they'll be cutting off the water. But, hey, I wanted to mention also, you were talking yesterday, it was 2 weeks ago, I believe, that the talk was, about the West might have some trouble with the English-speaking and looking commanders of the Nazis that are holed out in the steel plant there in Mariupol. So they seem to have done it fairly well. They have guys on that look like they're kind of American, and hint that there might be anything amiss. There's a lot of rumors out there that are holding these people hostages and using them as human shields, and I think they might be desperate enough, because the Russians might just kill them, and because they know what's been going on in Ukraine there in terms of we put the Nazis in control, and but they seem to have handled that pretty well. What are your comments on that?
Well, when you mentioned the Nazis, we call neo-Nazis now, right? Because defeated the Nazis 77 years ago. We're just about to celebrate BE Day. But there are neo-Nazis. And every Russian knows that the Nazis were responsible for the deaths of 26 million people during World War II. By comparison, the U.S. lost about 425,000 military people. So the Russians kind of used to this, but they know about Nazis. And one of the reasons that Putin's popularity is over 80% is because every Russian wants to nip the Nazis in the bud. And sad to say, NATO has been supporting them, has been using them to spearhead the attack on the Russian-speaking people.
Okay, Greg, I got to let you go. We only have 2 minutes left. I want to focus on that. Thank you for calling, Greg, and also Paul. I can't have any more callers. Ray McGovern, my guest in the last couple of minutes. So this, you pushed back against this whole idea of an unprovoked war, which is really the dominant narrative in the U.S. media. I can't speak for Europe, but I assume largely there too. And the whole idea of the denazification is something that the media has pushed back on in terms of a supposedly disinformation from Putin as a major part of the narrative. Now, this Azov battalion, which you're talking about and Greg was talking about, is how important is that really? Because a lot of people say that it's really rather marginal, the neo-Nazi or Nazi presence in the militias or the Ukrainian military. You want to talk about that?
Sure. They were used as a spearhead of the coup on the Maidan on February 22, 2014. And then they were used as a spearhead of those who were shelling the people in eastern Ukraine, Russian speakers, some of them Russian citizens. 14,000 people were killed. Now, Putin feels strongly about these things. So do most Russians. It's a very popular thing to clean out the Nazis, and there are Nazis. And sadly, the U.S., Victoria Nuland, we know. We have the evidence that they perpetrated that coup. And they knew they were Nazis. They said, well, let's let the Nazis head up the security services. Let's not put them in the prime, make them prime minister. So the Nazis have been used by NATO, if you will. And that's a strange passive events. The significance of it, of course.
Well, you know, that's we have to go. This is we're flush out of time, and that's a subject that really would take a whole other hour. Unfortunately, we're getting into it. I mean, because it's a really significant part of this disinformation war going on, a parallel war to the actual war going on, which is a terrible, terrible war. And everybody's around the world is kind of paralyzed and feeling terrible because there's massive suffering going on. But we do need to have a clear-sighted view of the actual, you know, dynamics that set this in motion. And I appreciate having you on to talk about that, but we are out of time. Thank you so much, Ray McGovern.
You're most welcome, Paul.
All right. Stay tuned for more great programming. We are in our spring membership drive. One quick last reminder, go to kboo.fm and support this kind of truth-seeking, whatever your position, you must agree we need to hear these voices because there is a drumbeat going on that doesn't really allow for the kind of voices you just heard. Go to kboo.fm, click on donate, or text KBOO to 54321. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Ty, for running the board. Bye, everybody.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m. Next up is Fight the Empire.